begin a new school year around the world, much of the discussion amongst parents, teachers, and politicians has been about what restrictions should be in place and whether or not children should even be together in classrooms. But just as all schools might say they exist to educate the leaders of tomorrow, more meaningful conversations may lie in thinking about engaging students who have spent months learning remotely. And as many big universities have gone fully remote and are wondering about the model for the future, it's a vital time to focus in on how people learn and engage with the problems facing our world. And it's safe to say the education space is primed for a huge shift and is in need of some entrepreneurial vision. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. This week on the show, I speak to Bernard Gatiman. He is headmaster and director of the Institut Oftum Rosenberg, a leading boarding school in St. Gallen, Switzerland. His family has owned and run the school for four generations. From philanthropy to business to politics, Gatiman and his team are educating the young minds who may well lead those fields in the future. It's a massive task, of course, thinking about how to harness the power of technology and create the best opportunities, but also to show students the magic of what happens when people come together in person to learn and problem solve. Over the months of lockdown, more than 200 students from 50 countries went through their coursework online, but now they are back at the boarding school to start the new year. Mr. Gatiman joined me from our bureau in Zurich, and I began by asking him about the history of the school.
My school is called Institut Oftum Rosenberg. It was founded in 1889, so we have quite a bit of legacy and tradition to be proud of. And at the same time, we understand we are only as good as we are right now. And that means we have a very dynamic culture. We have a very young team that is very forward-looking and that works very hard in an entrepreneurial way to make sure that we can be the best we can be today.
You know, in the past couple of months, obviously, all of the conversation has been around what a return to school will look like. Should children go back to school? What types of restrictions there should be? But what's struck me, actually, is the fact that there hasn't been much conversation about how perhaps we should be teaching children if, you know, a bit of remote learning, a bit of technology, how those things sort of play a role in not only how we instruct, but how students are learning today and what they're used to. What's the conversation been like for you and your team?
Well, I think with regards to remote learning and all these kind of challenges that the COVID crisis has brought about, I think in many ways this has just been an accelerator for so many areas, and education is one of them. For me and my team, it was also a good opportunity to work together with our students and to come up with creative, innovative solutions. And basically, this is part of our mantra, and this is something we teach all the time. You need to be adaptable. You need to be able to go with time. So here was a great opportunity for everyone to come together. We have a very strong entrepreneurial spirit. We managed, for example, to get a timetable together, an online timetable that spans across all time zones, which was quite a challenge, but we got it up and running within 3 working days. This is something which I'm quite proud of. So you can see, I think everybody took this with a bit of shock, but after that had settled, we knew we just have to make the best out of the situation.
Now, the new school year is upon us, of course. What does that look like? Will students be returning at all? Is this all remote learning? Can we talk just a little bit more about how the actual sort of curriculum and makeup will look in the months ahead?
Yes, sure. You know, initially in March, we were one of the first schools in Switzerland, and because we are predominantly a boarding school, we were one of the first schools in Switzerland that decided to send students home for early spring holidays. And we did that simply because at the time, it was very hard for us to gauge the situation, to see how complicated things would be. And we were worried that our students wouldn't be able to return home in time with flight cancellations and border quarantine issues and so on and so forth. We then had a period of online learning, but we invited all of our students back in summer. So we did something quite unusual, actually. We provided an online live learning experience. So that means we did not just upload assignments for the students to solve themselves, but we had all the classes in using video conferencing software. So they were running online. And then in mid-June, we asked the students, we invited them back to come to Switzerland. and the vast majority of students joined us back on campus. And then they had what I would describe a normal school experience within the limits of what's possible right now. So just to give you an idea, whereas normally our students would be able to spend a free time in town, for example, to visit a cafe with each other, we actually organized that free time on campus. So we got them ice cream vans. We always had a special every day. We had a barista coming to make coffee. We had different workshops. We got them barbers and hairdressers onto campus. So we just tried to keep them there because we know that this is an important part of our safety precautions to minimize the risk of a COVID spread in school. And with regards to your question to the new school year now in September, this is exactly how we will approach it. We have special measures in place. We're testing students before they arrive, and then we're testing them again. They spend time in quarantine until they clear to join the community. And so we have a lot of measures in place that should minimize the risk, and all of the things where we understand, okay, it is not exactly the same experience. For example, when it comes to socializing, we are trying to create alternative opportunities for our students to enjoy their time together, because we just understand being in a classroom together, having that social exchange, having the type of debate, a life debate you want to have, it's just not the same if you're having that online in a video call than when you're all together in one room.
Yes, absolutely, and very well said. Now, of course, any school, any institution will say they are there to sort of create the bright minds of the future and set people up for success. But I really enjoy the way that you think about what the future will actually look like when the students that are in the school now get there. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you think in that sense? You used the term earlier, entrepreneurial, and I love that, thinking about education, because we don't often talk about it in that sector. But talk to me a little bit about how you sort of think about what the future will look like for the kids that are at the school now.
Well, it's a very interesting question, what the future will look like. And frankly, we're unable to predict that precisely. There are a few trends that we've identified or things that we think in terms of skill sets and mindsets that our students will need to succeed in the future. One of them is adaptability, creativity comes to mind. In a world increasingly dominated by machines, where is that human role and where are skills as fantastic human beings best employed? When we speak to our parents, and actually that is a great source for us for inspiration when it comes to anticipating the future, many of whom are successful entrepreneurs. And so in these exchanges, they tell us exactly the same. They say, yes, the world will see increased digitalization, will see increased automation, but at the same time, there is this human niche that we just need to build up. And those are the skills that I've mentioned earlier. One thing is clear, nobody will be successful in the future knowing knowledge off by heart or reciting that knowledge. Those are fields and domains that machines will be able to conquer much more successfully. We have to make sure our students have an understanding of the world, they have a holistic point of view, they understand how things are interconnected, and they need to have this entrepreneurial mindset to see this massive time of change as an opportunity for them to reinvent industries, to become real leaders of that change.
You mentioned the word creativity, and I love that idea. If we're talking about more technology involved in learning, perhaps, or in how people interact with the world, how do you sort of spark that creativity in a classroom setting?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. How do you teach creativity? The question of creativity is so important because creativity knows so many different forms. I think the easiest way to teach creativity is to infuse it in all parts of school life. You know, that starts with, how do you teach a class? Do you give the answer, or do you enable the students to have a dialogue with each other to come to an answer? Do you lead that class as a teacher, ensuring that there is a debate and maybe there is not one clear outcome, which is much closer to life than say, you know, here's a textbook and at the back of it, you have the correct answers. So it's very much about having that culture in school. And then at the same time, we engage in so many different projects with a program that we call Talent Enrichment that gives our students the chance to explore the world of today in the classroom already. So we work with many different industries and we have a lot of interesting courses that range from coding to robotics to fashion design to philanthropy. And in all these areas, when they do a lot of project-based work, they understand it is okay to be creative. It is okay not to have one right answer, but possibly multiple correct answers. But they also learn to fail, and they learn to understand that as as you develop a project, it is good to reflect, to go back on it and say, well, you know, next time I would approach this in a slightly different way, just to go out and try something. And very often when you're experimental, when you're being creative, beautiful new things get born. And this is the type of experience that they can make in our school.
And talk to me a little bit of how you sort of introduce real world problems or the problems that other companies and entrepreneurs out there are trying to solve today with technology and without. How do you sort of engage the students with what's happening in the world today?
It's actually quite simple. We either go out and meet the companies and the entrepreneurs or the institutions. So to give you a few examples, we visited the Norman Foster Foundation in Madrid, and our students had an exclusive workshop there, getting a perspective of, you know, sustainable building, of design. We went to Vitra here in Switzerland together with our students. They're working on a really innovative project where our students will have the chance to think about the future of modular furniture, for example. And then we also get companies in to Rosenberg. We've recently run a very interesting workshop this summer with a small spin-off of ETH Zurich, and this spin-off is focusing on how to develop plant cultures which are actually not planted in soil but have them hanging, and they're doing that with a lot of technology, combining it with 3D modeling and printing. And this is one way, for example, how you can address some of the food shortages or the more sustainable aspect of producing our own food. So by getting into real life contact with those people, with those entrepreneurs, our students have the chance to try it themselves hands-on. So we don't just want to have a lecture, we always want there to be a real life activity involved, and we want the final product to actually be a real life product as well. And as these entrepreneurs and business leaders engage with our students and work on this project, is a wealth of opportunities to ask questions and to find out about challenges and about thoughts for the future and what the real world is really all about at this moment in time.
Very well said. Of course, there is a seriousness and an importance in keeping children safe in the next few months. But I'm just curious if you might have any advice for other head teachers, principals, teachers out there around the world thinking about this return to the classroom. Obviously, there are restrictions in place. There is social distancing. There is masks. There's all that. Perhaps some remote learning. But is there another important conversation that perhaps at this time, as we return to classrooms around the world, might be a more constructive conversation?
Well, I think there is a big debate about the opportunity cost of keeping children 100% safe, and that effectively means keeping them at home. And on the other hand, giving them access to a human right, which is education. And, you know, as always in life, the truth is somewhere in the middle. My advice to everyone, but I'm sure all my colleagues and other entrepreneurs running schools such as ours are well aware of the challenges. One of the things that we've learned pretty quickly is that it's something we have to take seriously. And at the same time, I think with the right team of teachers and educators or artisans, is how we like to refer to our teachers and to our team members. If you have the right team together, you can overcome any challenge. You can have school during COVID. You have to take it seriously. You have to take your precaution, but school must go on. It is such an important experience for students, because the downside risk is that we'll have a whole generation of students that have missed out on this privilege, and we should not take the risk.
You know, you touched on sort of the idea of risk and the fine balance between keeping people safe and you know, giving them the right of a good education and being in the classroom to really engage and have that human interaction, which is obviously so important for going out into the world and continuing their education and careers later. I wonder, though, if you think about how important it is to introduce to students sort of a little bit of risk, let's say, in life, or a little bit of wayfinding, pathfinding. You talked about the kids being able to go into the city and enjoy the cafe by themselves and things like that. How important is it sort of to present the real world to children so they can understand it themselves?
I think it is very important. And I think successful people are always risk takers. And, you know, we are in the business of providing education to the next generation of leaders in whatever field that may be, from philanthropy to business to politics. And so I think taking a calculated risk, and I think probably emphasize that word, it needs to be a calculated risk, something where you can live with the consequences. That is a very important learning experience. And so we can achieve that in many ways through project work, as I've I've just mentioned, if we have students and they're working on a prototype and they're not 100% sure what the outcome of that will be, even though maybe they have a deadline for a presentation, then I would consider that a very good experience for risk taking. I just believe when it comes to the current situation with the virus all around, exposing our student body or exposing our school community to an unnecessary risk of, for example, the benefit of going to a cafe, then I would say that's a calculated risk we do not want to take. And that's, of course, a decision we have to take in a team, in a senior leadership team in my school every single day. And we analyze that and we put it into context with infection numbers locally, internationally, recommendation of government bodies and so on and so forth. And so it is about finding that balance, and it's about making sure they can still be risk takers without necessarily being exposed to a sickness they don't necessarily need to have. I mean, there is no benefit to this experience.
Very well said. Well, indeed, it does sound like you have your work cut out for you as the new school year gets underway. It's an exciting time, always the most exciting time for both teachers and students. So I do appreciate your time. This has been very interesting.
Thank you very much, Daniel. It was a pleasure.
Bernard Gadiman, the headmaster and director of the Institut Oftum Rosenberg, the boarding school based in St. Gallen, Switzerland. Next up on this week's show, we're off to the west coast of the United States. These days, many people are, of course, taking the time to explore nature closer to home, as travel restrictions have hampered plans to cross oceans and continents for holidays. While many people are booking into Airbnbs or hotels, others are looking for a more unique outdoor experience. Lodge Camps is a brand I've long been following, known for their hotels geared towards exploring some of the most beautiful places out west. Across Washington, Oregon, Colorado, and California, Lodge has breathed new life into the great American pastime of loading up the car and heading out on an adventure in nature. And in some cases, they've even renovated and revived old highwayside motels. From hotel rooms, hostel bunks, and campsites, Lodge is all about the outdoors. I spoke to co-founder and CEO Johannes Ariens.
Actually, a large portion of kind of where the concept came from was this large space that we saw existing somewhere, if you will, kind of in the world between Best Western and Airbnb, both which have their merits and their demerits for sure. And so when it comes to group or individual travel, what we really wanted to do was create something that spoke to people from an individual and kind of lifestyle brand perspective, such as Airbnb does for so many people, but gave people additional kind of what I would call latitude in both consistency, so kind of knowing what you're going to get, and then also more of a plug-in into the community of folks that are coming to these same places for the same thing that you are. So if you are a solo traveler, for instance, it's likely that if you're staying on a lodge, you're going to be able to find somebody that might also be a solo traveler that's there for the same thing, be that, you know, going on a hike or mountain biking or things along those lines. And then if you're there with a group, we've got large outdoor kitchens, all those kinds of things, but you're not having to share a bathroom with your best friend that you might not care to. All of our locations are full year round. We see that as something that is sometimes complex and difficult because we certainly do have slower portions of the year at our locations. But from a brand consistency and really, you know, kind of product delivery and also ability to retain a really, really high caliber crew, doing seasonal just makes those things incredibly challenging. And so for us, we certainly saw it as advantageous to, you know, really select locations that allow us to operate on a full year-round basis.
Very well said. Yeah, and they look immaculate from the photos. I'll have to check it out one day in person on the West Coast. I'm just curious. I want to come on to some trends in the industry right now, but I'm just curious about you personally growing up, if you spent a lot of time outdoors and if this sort of project and company is a little bit about you and your co-founders and projecting something that you really wanted to see in the space.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Kale, my co-founder, and I were both, you know, very, very, I would say active, you know, certainly just recreational, but very, very actively recreational in the kind of outdoor active lifestyle spaces. He's a distance runner who kind of does ultra marathons, things along those lines. And then I'm a quite active skier, climber, surfer, and mountain biker, et cetera. And what we came to realize, it was super interesting, was that you have all these, you know, fantastic destinations that really cater to outdoor active lifestyles, such as, you know, kind of a Jackson or a Vail, maybe, or Aspen, things along those lines. And they're great, but one, they're very, very price inaccessible. And then two, any one unique user actually spends the extreme minority of their kind of recreating time in those places. More generally, the majority, the extreme majority of their time is spent 3 to 4 hours from their house in these kind of smaller second markets, you know, outside of mass urban centers. You know, they're easy to get to and they want to go there 10, 15, 20 times a year. And those places have such a little amount of product that actually really speaks to that user group, like what you find in these kind of A destinations. And that's really where we saw the opportunity. And within those locations, you know, kind of the Great American Road Trip, which, you know, was really just thriving through the 60s and 70s, really kind of took a bit of a decline. So in those locations, there's these just incredible mid-century motels that have really kind of gone by the wayside that we can go in, work with the owners of the existing places and figure out a way to bring lodge into those places, renovate them, and really kind of bring them back to life and do so in a way that still keeps so much of that character intact. That truly does make each location very, very unique.
That's fantastic. And perhaps on the carbon footprint and sustainability front, that is doing a huge service there. Myself being from North America, I can understand what you're sort of describing in the glory days, let's say, of the family road trip, you know, close to nature, but highway side sort of hotels and such. But talk to me a little bit of actually how you pick the locations and some of the different ones now.
So what we do is, you could say we kind of fall into two primary industries, if you will. One being hospitality, lodging, and the other being kind of outdoor active lifestyle, you know, that sort of outdoor brand, outdoor industry, if you will. And how we go about picking these locations is really by actively being in that second one, right? In that outdoor active lifestyle industry. What we do there is, you know, we engage with the brands, the consumers, and really act as if, you know, we're not delivering a lodging product, but that we're delivering a recreation product. And so part of that is going out and being in that industry ourselves. We go to outdoor retailer. We are active outdoorsmen ourselves. So we're out, you know, recreating and really finding those special places outside of these major urban centers. And I'll give you an example. Our second location, Leavenworth, Washington, is in the Central Cascades. It's a Bavarian themed town. It's an incredible access point to just practically endless recreation. It's roughly 2.5 hours from downtown Seattle. And basically everybody in the Pacific Northwest goes there, knows about it. You know, it's an incredibly popular destination, practically 100% year round. It slows down a little bit in November and March, but not really much at all. And what's interesting about Leavenworth is it's a thriving property for us, a thriving town, 2.5 hours from Seattle. No one in Florida, very few people, I should say, in Florida have ever heard of it. And that's completely okay, right? And that's the kind of place where I don't need the person in Florida to know about this place. I need all the people in the Pacific Northwest to know about this place, because those are the people that are going to that market. They're not going there once every 2 years. They're going there 5 times a year, right? Then what that does is that gives us the ability to target our marketing, really dialing into the regional markets of which these locations live and figuring out where are these spots that exist outside of every major urban metro in the United States and really, frankly, globally. It's like where everyone in that city, it's the place you go on the weekend to recreate, to get outside, right? And for many cities, there might be 3, 4, 5 of those places outside of any given city. And what are those places? And the person across the country doesn't need to know what those places are, because we're not selling this place to that person. We're selling it to that person's going to drive there and be that 15 stay a year person who really is the fabric that holds our company together and really we rely on as a customer.
You know, thinking again about the way travel is done in North America, of course, you have a huge market for people that go to those more upscale places you already mentioned. There's obviously people with a little bit of money will have their summer home, their cabin, their cottage, things like that. But I'm just curious about the potential you saw for people that might not have that but want to escape to the outside. Obviously, now this summer, obviously because of the pandemic, that is a huge thing. But leading up to this, is that sort of a market you wanted to target?
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. So it's interesting. So many of sort of what would be our target demographic really saw through the 2008 financial crisis, really saw, you know, in a lot of cases, their parents, their families who might have been in a position where they were overlevered or, you know, just kind of too extended, largely brought on by effectively what they might interpret as just frankly ownership and having a lot of kind of burdensome things that for this today's consumer really see as decreasing freedom and decision-making and choice, right? When you have all those things, that decreases your flexibility and fluidity, but you still want to be able to participate in kind of what those you know, nice amenities do bring. And so really the idea is, how can we create a sense of place where someone feels like they are a part of it, and that, you know, it is theirs and they want to bring their friends to and show them and really, you know, kind of engage with the brand, much similar to how you see with a lot of kind of consumer and apparel products, where people really, you know, kind of resonate with and really take ownership and really see that brand as an extension of their identity. That's what we see the opportunity to do with Lodge. And that's exactly it, right? Like, our consumer preference is turning so much towards spend on experience over goods. And when we do that, we want to be able to really kind of have a voice with how we spend and be able to direct that in a way that we feel aligns with our value set and whatnot. In the consumer category, market has done really, really well with that. And in hospitality, that just hasn't so much been the case. But as we direct our spending more towards experience and kind of less away from stuff, the need for that from the kind of consumer marketplace is just exceptional. And that's really kind of what we were doing with Lodge, was like, thinking through how do you take a much more interactive and deeper brand customer relationship approach to hospitality? Because we just saw that as something that, you know, Airbnb did really well with out the gate, but beyond them just hasn't been heavily executed in the hospitality lodging sector.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You mentioned the spend on experience. And of course, that will be something people are thinking a lot about now. As I mentioned, a lot of that focus has returned to travel to where you can get to, essentially, where there are no restrictions and, you know, not flying abroad. A lot of people thinking about closer to home. Now, I imagine you do, in normal times, have international travelers as well. But talk to me just a little bit about the conversations you've had around the trends that are coming out of this and how people sort of want to get out and connect with brands, as you've said.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, I think a large part of that is what, you know, we see a few things, right? One is just massive amounts of transparency in communication action, right? As a brand, you really are quite exposed, and what you do is going to be known. And that's not a bad thing at all. And so with that comes, you know, really a expectation on behalf of the customer for brands that they are, you know, especially in the discretionary categories, where it's not something that is necessarily a commodity that you have to be purchasing, right? That's very much, we are very much a discretionary product. And with those things, you kind of have the ability, or you at least desire the ability to kind of have decision-making prowess and really also support or don't support brands that you feel are doing their, you know, kind of their best to forward values that align with your own. And that's, you know, something that you see that in so many categories, right? You've got the kind of the Tom Shoes of the world and these types of brands that are really looking at what they're doing, and sure, they're kind of fulfilling a baseline, you know, need might be the wrong word, but certainly a baseline desire. And how they're doing that, you know, it's like there's 1,000 other hotels that you can stay at, or there's a, you know, in the case of Tom Shoes, there's 1,000 other kinds of shoes if you just need a shoe to put on your foot. But if what you're interested in is supporting and driving forward a value set that you withhold, then how can you do that in an area where, like, you do want to go and consume, right? And for us, that's an area of experience where it's like, I don't want to be burdened down with all this stuff. I want to, you know, really be able to push forward my value set and do that through experience over things. And that's a continuing trend that we're seeing, you know, I would say quite certainly globally. And then as we move into kind of the pandemic era, what we're seeing as it relates to folks wanting to get out and still continue to have experiences and have, you know, kind of a meaningful time outdoors, and really health and wellness becoming something that is not something that's relegated to kind of a luxury spa, but instead something that really is speaking to the greater mass society as a priority. What's out there for those people, right? And that's really where Lodge, we see the easiest way to participate in those types of activities is the outside through our public lands, right? They're by and large free. And for us, we can go to places and kind of be an access point for people to kind of learn what those are about and experience those and really put their health first.
Very interesting and exciting to think about the next few months for you guys at Lodge. We will watch closely and perhaps we'll have to catch up not too far down the line. But for now, Johannes, thank you so much for your time. This has been really interesting.
Of course, thank you.
Johannes Arians, co-founder and CEO of Lodge Camps. You can learn more at lodgecamps.com, LOGECamps.com. That's all for this week's show. My thanks to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening and goodbye.